our story that we wanted to tell. And while it is navigating a very, technical precedent-setting case, it also, help advance the film making industry in the process as well. So while we were able to tell our story, we were able to ensure that, other Indigenous communities can ensure that, that sovereignty, that narrative sovereignty piece is considered, but also associated benefits with telling our story.
You touched on again some of these points that I was hoping to address, which I guess I might just kind of very pointedly ask, what effect do you think, or that you know, or that you've heard feedback that you've gotten from members of the Sai Kus Nation or Stillhattan Nation, if once this documentary was out, what effect or what change did it have for members of those nations?
So one of the other layers that we were able to include in this film was developing an impact campaign. There's multiple major projects being proposed within the region, but also utilizing it as a tool to engage with not only our members of our respective communities of Stillhattan and Sai Kus, but also within the broader non-Indigenous communities as well, the Vanderhoof community, the Fraser Lake, everywhere else, all the way to Kitimat. So it really did help raise, greater awareness about that. But it also allowed for conversations to occur around food sovereignty, impacts to health and well-being and racism, systemic racism, and having those difficult conversations around settler colonialism. So these types of conversations were able to kind of pull from different themes of the film, which you hear brought out by the different characters that are highlighted. And as Liana mentioned, there's just a few folks that are highlighted in this film, but there's multiple generations of community members and leadership who have been raising these issues for many years. And I think it really does offer the opportunity to have those conversations, not just in the courtrooms and the boardrooms, but in the classrooms and the workspaces and, out on the land where a lot of these industrial activities are happening, at the operational level.
Yeah, we had a screening before the premiere of the film last year in Vanderhoof for community members. And it was the most nervous I've been through the whole process because, this was the audience that I most wanted to be okay with what they were seeing on the screen. And the response was amazing. And there were just two things in particular. One of the community members whose relative they heard through the archival recordings, was so emotional and so moved by being able to hear the voice of their relative. And I just and then I had a family member who was there too, who just spoke to me a number of times, called me actually a couple of days later to talk about how highly he thought of the film and how good it was to see our people on the screen in that way.
Yeah, I think there are, regardless of our geographical situations, we are still connected within these different watershed systems and, the broader climate connections. And I think there's still opportunities for us to collectively, question these systemic racist platforms that are advancing, different processes, different laws and legislation that aren't in alignment with our collective wellness and stewardship obligations that we have, whether we're Indigenous or non-Indigenous. I think there's still the opportunity to ensure that, principles like the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, that those are still being considered in amongst the broader Canadian public and whichever watershed system you might be in, because those implications can affect anyone, when projects aren't done in a good way, led by those people who have been stewarding those resources for millennia. So I think you know, we can continue to question these systems that continue to do harm and work with Indigenous peoples to identify and advance solutions that we are creating, because I think many of our communities and First Nations communities, we're not always against developments or trying to impede certain things. We just want to ensure that, you know, there's systems that are in place, that they're being done in a good way, that they're in alignment with our values and our principles, and can meet objectives that benefit all of us.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that's, I mean, very similarly, what I was thinking was one of the main things that I was thinking through the making of this film throughout over the years was how remarkable it is, I think, that the nations are doing this work, you know, for the nations and for their membership, but for the good of all of, you know, the communities and the systems and structures, because we've always had this understanding that our waters are connected, our lands are connected, that what happens in one part of our watershed is going to affect other parts. And so the restoration and the stewardship of that is really crucial for the health and well-being of everyone. I just don't think we can tolerate these really policies that are ruining us anymore, and work together to figure out a good way forward. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to watching this documentary in a room full of people, whether they're seeing it for the first time or if they've seen it before here in Smithers. And I just thank you so much both for taking the time out of your extremely busy schedules to speak with me.
Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. Really appreciate it.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
And thanks to you at home for listening. We here at CJSF really appreciate our listeners and are glad you're out there tuning into this radio station and making a choice to do that. You know, radio and everything we do here at this station wouldn't make a lot of sense if there weren't people like you out there in the community tuning in and listening to the many different kinds of programming and programs like this. So thank you for being there. It kind of provides a purpose to everything we do here at CJSF, so it's good to have you here. We're going to go to Gardening with Embark, but what are you going to talk about?
Nelson Rockefeller and a few other things.
I like the title of one of those books you're going to be referencing.
A Conspiratorial Life.
A Conspiratorial Life.
The John Birch Society and the Revolution of American Conservatism.
Okay. Crazy stuff. It'll be up in about 13 minutes. But first, Gardening with Embark.
Welcome to Gardening with Embark, our weekly gardens segment. Joining me in the studio, as always, is Pablo Vimas from Embark Sustainability. It's week 18, lots of nice weather out there, and changing, cold, warm, hot,
hi everyone,
rainy.
Yeah, good morning everyone. Yes, this week has been quite extremes, I will say. Mm-hmm. Over the weekend, last weekend we had very warm weather, summer-like. We were in shorts, t-shirts, working in the garden, and by Monday the temperature drop, mm-hmm, and everything. Here in Burnaby Mountain, we had kind of a very much drop because the leaves of the plants, some of them choke. They were damaged by frost night frost. So yeah, so it was something serious. The weather is warming up again for this weekend, and yeah, so now we are in a mode like time to bring our summer crops out. So tomatoes, peppers, corn starting. So we are just kind of ready to go. May is here, and we're just now ready for the gardening season. But I was thinking, what if you don't have the time commitment, because gardening requires time commitment in order to have a good production.
Yeah, lots of people have busy lives, family, or demanding jobs, or
but you still want to garden. So what is my approach? So if you recall at the beginning of the program, we started that there are different types of gardening and different philosophies. And today, let's focus on edible perennial gardening. So you plant once and you just continue maintaining, caring about that garden, rather than what we do here, food production, is planting a lettuce and after certain weeks, we harvest and we plant another.
Right.
And really, it's time commitment. You have to harvest, replant, harvest, replant, harvest, replant.
And you're doing a lot of, you know, starting from your seeds and planting seedlings and then transplanting.
So there's a lot of tasks in between, between you put your seed and you harvest. So today will be about how I can have a garden if my time commitment is limited. Okay. So that will be just what we call the perennial edible garden. So plants that last for more than 3 years, and then you still can eat those, or you can use them. Some of the examples we have, the herbs, so oregano, sage, rosemary, thyme, you plant once, and over the winter, they will die back, and the spring, they will come back. So you don't have to worry about replanting, but you can benefit from harvesting the all year round. And in the fall, you will harvest the leaves, you will dry out, and then you have all your dry herbs for the winter. and then we have tubers as well, such as horseradish. The tops die over the winter, but the root stays there, so in spring it comes back. And at the latest spring, you can harvest, split the plant, eat something, replant the rest. So a bit more, kind of a weekend task that you can do that. We call you sunchokes, or also called Jerusalem artichokes. You plant, you harvest every late spring, and whatever is left, it will reshoot. So it's like when you forget to harvest all your potatoes, there will be some volunteers left in there.
Yeah.
The same happened with the sunchokes. So the next year, and if you plant on purpose, next year you will have, again, more sunchokes. So it's plant once, continue harvesting year after year, as long as you keep some stock in the ground.
Right.
Then we have a walking onion, or Egyptian onion, as it's called. These onion flowers, and at the top of the flowers, they make little bulbs, tiny little onions. And what happens is that they are so heavy that the leaves bend, and those onions touch the ground, set root. So
start a new plant.
So that's why walking. So starting one place, drops, and then moves on. So that is another thing that we can do with roots. Of course, asparagus. Asparagus, plant once. You don't harvest during the three first years, but after that, it's a constant harvesting. So you don't have to worry about the asparagus. As long as you let, after harvesting the spring spears, you let the plant go in full bloom and cut it back. And for the next year, you have a strong stock in the root stock and a new pro, new.
So you just cut the spears off and leave the rest of the plant there, and it will.
Yeah, it will continue growing. Yes. So, so usually the leaves of asparagus looks like a deal. This is not here. At the end of fall, they make the green berries. Red berries. And yeah, over the winter, it dies back all the leaf part, and you just get the roots. So that's another one. Celeriac could be another one that we can keep in the garden, in the ground. But if you say, "Oh, I like my leaves. I want to have my leafy greens in there," well, we have the wild arugula. The wild arugula is a plant that you plant once, and by the fall it flowers, it sells seeds. During the winter it dies back, and in spring comes back again. Plus the seeds that they were self-seeded. So with wild arugula, the work is into keep it the patch compact rather than spreading, because right. it tends to spread all over the place.
Yeah.
It's just to keep the patch compact. Here we have the French sorrel, mm-hmm. which is nice. It stands all over the winter, and constantly we pluck the leaves, we pull the leaves, and we keep continue harvesting. And so the, as long as you water and maintain, this is a constant leafy greens in there. The same with rhubarb. Rhubarb, mm-hmm. well, as well. This is we eat the stem of the leaf, and so every year, and even we can force the rhubarb to grow early by covering it and maintaining right. it in the dark, so kind of forcing the winter to the rhubarb to start growing early. So,
and are we again? We cut the stalks off, harvest the stems that we want to use, and leave the rest of the plant there, and it's going to come back.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's just harvesting, and you don't have to worry. And rhubarb is very, mm-hmm. very strong. And then we have watercress. Oh, that's interesting. Here in our garden, we have watercress. Mm-hmm. We just planted one, and it receded. So it's like a wild arugula. We had to keep it contained because it will go all over the place.
Yeah.
Wood sorrel is another type of wild plant that we can grow in our garden. And again, we just continue harvesting over the winter, and the stock stays on the ground. Then we can have flowers, like artichokes.
Mm-hmm.
Artichoke is what we eat, is the flower, the unbolted flower. Again, plant once, and it keeps growing year after year. Of course, there are some pests that are attracted to artichokes, like the black aphids. But if you keep in control, keep your soil with nutrients, and you can have a healthy plant, and you have your flowers, artichokes. Marigolds and calendula, they tend to recede themselves. So the fact is that you have to be on top of collecting the flowers, because they're edible flowers, and leaving few of them to go into seed and recede themselves. So, and then you have a constant flowers in your garden. Pansies, they love winter. It's interesting, those pansies, they are happy in winter.
Yeah.
And so, and the leaves, the flowers are edible for drinks, for teas, for cakes, you name it.
Yeah.
You can use it different ways. As well, we like to have some fruits in the garden. And the ones that I am favorite are the Saskatoon berry.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small shrub with lots of berries at the beginning of June. So from June to July, there is lots of berries. So we can harvest those. The leaves are also edible. The berries can make into, are sweet. They can make into jams, into jellies. We have some. And the other one will be the wild strawberries.
Mm-hmm.
The wild strawberries, they stand very well the winter. The berries are small, very tiny, but delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And they are used to our kind of weather, where the humidity and the dry conditions change. So these are some of our favorite plants that you can start in pots if you're doing container gardening, or you can make sure that it is in your plot, nicely mm-hmm. organized, so you can continue doing gardening without, if you don't have a time to come every week and to be constantly in the garden. So that's one approach, that having your edible garden in mm-hmm. there.
And this could be a great approach for a community garden where it's not at your home. You have to go there to go and visit the garden, which adds an extra element of time and effort to maintain your garden. But something like this where you can definitely make it a little sort of simpler.
Yeah, a bit simpler. And if the garden is far away from home, it's time commitment. But if you plant these perennials, your only work will be in watering, and as well weeding, so to keep nice and all your plants happy. So that time commitment very much reflects here in our gardening. in the student union, I always remind our gardeners to water on Friday before the weekend, because on weekends, very rare people come to campus. So the same happens if your gardening space is far away from home.
Well, this sounds great for busy folks. And, of course, I guess you can mix it up a bit as well with a lot of the sort of edible stuff to for a lot of what you're producing, and then maybe a few things like lettuces or tomatoes and stuff that, you know, you can put more time into, but it's just part of your garden that needs that attention.
Yes. So you can put onions, like you mentioned, some tomatoes, some peppers, a chili here and there, some onions. But the main bulk of the garden stays perennial. Yeah. So you don't have to worry about, like, oh, next year I have to plow the land, I have to work the till the soil and replant everything. What that happens here in our garden beds, which every year we have to make sure that they're clean and they're we have seeds, we have seedlings ready to go. So, but if you have your perennial garden with plants that will start popping up during the spring, it's like, yeah, why not?
Excellent. Well, that's a great tip. So many people are, you know, have busy lives and you know, probably think maybe a garden is too much for me, or maybe they've tried before and found it was too much. Yep. But this is a great, and these are great, you know, looking through, you know, the types of plants and stuff, you've got great, great stuff you can use in your cooking and your salads and throughout the season.
So, yeah, that's I think that's an alternative for our busy lives, and sometimes as our garden is not near home. So, yeah, why not to try something that is perennial and is edible?
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. Pablo's here every week to talk about gardens and gardening. And thank you for coming this week. Tell us a bit about Embark Sustainability.
Yeah, Embark Sustainability is a non-profit organization that is based in here in SFU Burnaby campus. You can see our work on food justice and climate equity in our website at embarksustainability.org or through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability.
Great. Thanks so much, Pablo Vimas. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
All right, time for Peter. We pinched a bit into your time here, Peter. I'm sorry about that, so I'll just let you go right into it.
Oh, anyway, so you've heard about, Coca-Cola used to put cocaine in their Coca-Cola. That was for a very brief period.
A medicinal drink.
Well, it was actually medical doctors in the 19th century were taking cocaine.
Yeah.
And then they found out what made this such a great idea. So this the CIA backing abstract expression is kind of the same thing in a way. I see it more like, well, especially Nelson Rockefeller. The Rockefellers sort of created it to be the avant-garde movement. Mm-hmm. Nelson Rockefeller was governor of New York from 1959 to 1973. He was vice president after Richard Nixon vacated the White House until January 1977. He was vice president. And one of the followers of Charles Manson, squeaky, almost assassinated Gerald Ford.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is that the John Birch Society has always been very critical of the Rockefellers, including especially Nelson Rockefeller. And it's sort of interesting that they're both kind of this paranoid anti-communist kind of thing, actually, when you kind of analysis it. And Nelson Rockefeller, in the eyes of the John Birch Society, or at the time, he was seen like a liberal, you know. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm looking at here, when he was governor of New York, he was for abortion, progressive abortion regulation. Mm-hmm. But and the guy's kind of a busy guy, you know. He's governor, 1959 to 1973. 1 year, I guess he had to arrest a bit before he's vice president. But this is what happened in 1969. I'm going to read a bit here.
Yep.
Governor Nelson Rockefeller, during a riot-plagued tour of Latin America for President Nixon, arrives at Rio de Janeiro Airport, guarded by Brazilian soldiers carrying automatic weapons. 1969. Tranquility was assured by the arrest of thousands before his arrival. During his meetings with head of the Brazilian junta, Rockefeller was handed a report by Brazilian secret police to relay to Nixon and National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger. So we see he's not very progressive, you see, when you put everything together.
Yeah.
And Brazil from 1964 to 1985 was under a Brazilian military dictatorship, which I think that Donald Trump would like that to continue. Now, this big book, I only read part of it.
What's it called?
It's called Thy Shall Be Done, The Conquest of the Amazon, Nelson Rockefeller and Evangelism in the Age of Oil. Now, what this book contends is that there was a William Townsend, founder of the ultra-conservative Bible translators, and they were kind of aggressively wanting everybody in the whole world to be able to have a translation of the Bible.
And they were sort of missionaries of a sort.
Well, also going to the Amazon, Billy Graham was involved at some point with this. You know, and he was a supporter of the Vietnam War. And then when it was over, he said, oh, I was never a supporter. He was, you know, he's probably at a hot place right now as far as I'm concerned, if all what he said was true. But so what's interesting is that now we have here, so we have a context. Like, he's not progressive.
Yeah.
Interesting, like, he's accused of being progressive by the John Birchers. I remember in the early 90s, I knew one guy was a member of the John Birch Society in British Columbia, and he went to like the libertarian meetings, and we're trying to convince him Ronald Reagan is not a communist. But
I guess it's all a matter of perspective, hey?
So when he was governor of New York.
Yeah.
They say Rockefeller created the first state's council on the arts in the country, which became a model for the National Endowment of the Arts. He also oversaw the construction of an art center and buildings and public work. He was part of this Empire State Plaza, which is sort of egg-shaped architecture or something. So it's sort of interesting that I would contend a lot of, like, when the National Gallery bought The Voice of Fire 35 years ago, they said, oh, you have to believe in this. Well, what are you believing in?
This is the Canadian National Gallery.
Yeah.
Expressionist piece of art.
And, you know, and just three stripes, like what your typical house painter could do over the weekend, as far as I'm concerned. And it's like, oh, you have to believe in the Amazon being taken over. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I think if you really follow what happened, it's not progressive, and we need a bit of changeover. Maybe I can start doing it. You know, so there, I think I covered a lot of ground here, and we still got a few minutes to spare with something that you might say, Magnus.
Well, I want to take a moment to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you ever hear stuff you'd like to comment on here at this program, Speak Up, or any of our programs, you can call us in the studio, or you can send us a text message, which we will see here in the studio right away. We always love to hear from our listeners. So if you think, if you got some insight into the things Peter's saying, or you want to say something to completely contradict him, that you can do that too. And the number there is 778-782-2573 or 782-CJSF. We'd love to hear from you. That text line is available all the time. You can reach out to any of our programs that way, and folks will see it in the studio. So I'd love to see you doing that here. We're glad you're listening to CJSF. Lots more great programming coming up today on CJSF. Democracy Now! Will start in about 30 seconds. Wandering Rhythms with Nick Legacy is up at 12 noon. Over 10 years of exploring the world of music from every country in the world and more.
Every country in the whole world.
He did.
And Vatican City, which is a country.
Yep, he went one show at every country, and then he ran out of countries.
Vatican City is coming up now.
Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now. For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.